This is the Unconquered Podcast, unbiased, unrivaled, and unconquered coverage and analysis of Florida State football.
In Florida State, we won national championships and ACC championships.
We're back to some basics, consistency in what we're doing. Guys getting a little banged and bruised, working a bunch of different situations, making progress.
You have to have success, so you know something, I can really do this.
Welcome to the Unconquered Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Staples. Today on the show, we're going to review the Clemson game, or should I say the Clemson beatdown. And we'll also look forward to the North Carolina State game and give Florida State fans a little bit more of a view of what to expect from this Florida State team going forward. All right, on to segment one. Well, obviously the first thing to talk about when reviewing the Clemson game is that this game went pretty much exactly as we at Noll Digest expected. And we may have been the only media outlet in the country that expected an outcome pretty much like what we saw. In fact, the most optimistic Florida State fans seem to be surprised by the degree of separation between these two teams. But the fact is that, Clemson, in particular, Clemson's offense is what we thought they were.
But they are who we thought they were.
They can't run the football. They don't have the playmakers that they did last year. They don't have the same kind of options on third down. The tape don't lie. That actually brings up a kind of funny story here, because my spot, my seat in the press box, which was unusually crowded for a top five matchup here, obviously that sort of thing happens, is an unusually crowded press box, and they gave some of us local folks, basically high school desks up behind the usual press box seats, stacked up just a little bit higher. But when I walked in, I realized that I was sitting behind a number of national writers who, normally aren't at these particular games. But they're definitely there for this type of game where it's a top five matchup. And I knew that all those guys had actually predicted a very close game or predicted a Clemson win. I just kind of made an offhanded comment of, well, looks like this one's going to be kind of disappointing for a lot of people on press row. At which point, one of the national guys turns around and says, "Well, why is that?" It's like, "Well, because this game ain't going to be close." Well, who do you think's going to win? It's not. What do you mean? Who do I think's going to win? Florida State, of course. I mean, this game ain't the gap between these two teams is huge. The tape don't lie. They lost five. They lost four of their five best playmakers on offense. They don't have the playmakers that they did. Florida State is actually better than they were last year. The gap between these programs has grown. Well, those guys didn't really believe things until about 5 or 10 minutes into the first quarter. At which point they realized that, as it turns out, maybe we should have realized that these teams were not anywhere near the same ballpark, the same vicinity. Bottom line is the tape don't lie, and Clemson just does not scare you the same way on offense that they did last year. As good as Sammy Watkins is, essentially with Sammy, what you've got is a kind of Percy Harvin playmaker. You don't have a true wide receiver that you can really depend on in the way that they could with Nuke Hopkins last year. They don't have a tight end that they can really depend on, both in the pass and the run game, the way that they could with Ford last year. They don't have a running game that they could really depend on last year, in part because of the loss of one of their best offensive linemen, and also because of Andre Ellington's departure. This is just, they were not as good as they were on offense, and we saw that actually, people should have noticed that against NC State, when they struggled to move the football at different points against NC State and against Boston College, where they had some trouble on offense as well. And then they finally really got exposed in this one, playing against a Florida State defense that is absolutely built to stop the spread. And frankly, this is probably the best anti-spread defense in the country right now. This may be not only the best anti-spread defense in the country this year, but it might be the best anti-spread defense that I've seen over the past few years. Last year's Florida defense was probably the next best that I've seen. And if you look at how they handled Johnny Manziel, you could see how that worked, and that would not have been different late in the year. I mean, LSU had similar success against Manziel late in the year against Texas A&M as well, because they had a lot of the same ingredients in their defense. But this Florida State defense is just built to stop that kind of offense. That 3-3-5 personnel with those three big defensive linemen, where you basically have two defensive tackles. You'll have Jernigan or Lawrence Stample on the inside, and then you've got Goldman, who played exceptionally well in this game, or McDaniel, who's playing outstanding football on the outside, on one side, sort of in that three technique or five technique, depending on how they want to play that front. And then also you have Mario Edwards as that defensive end. On the other side, you take those three guys, you stick Christian Jones in that hybrid defensive end outside linebacker position with the two Smiths on the inside and then the five defensive backs there. That personnel is about as good as you can imagine for anti-spread defense, for defending the spread. Basically, you know, Christian Jones is not all that instinctive. He was not very good, quite frankly, on the inside in the first few games, trying to play him in that 3-4 look. Just not an instinctive player in there. But boy, when you get him on the edge, and especially if you get him rushing the passer and using his athleticism on the edge to cover and do some of that stuff that he's able to do, dropping in coverage at that size. I mean, he is an incredible player in that role. He's an NFL player, no doubt, in that role. He's much better on the outside, much more comfortable, as we'd said on this podcast, and we're not the only people to have called that by any means. But then you take those defensive backs, and they're able to put five defensive backs out there, all of whom can cover. Even the safeties cover basically like corners in this scheme. I mean, Jalen Ramsey, one of the safeties, is a corner. He's basically like putting a young Cromartie out there, only with somebody that actually processes things a little quicker than Cromartie did, but he's the same kind of athlete, same kind of build and all that. So, I mean, you're looking at that 3-3-5 personnel that they can stick out there. And then when they go money package and they stick Nate Andrews out there as well, they can do so much out of that package in terms of coverage variation, in terms of matching up with personnel that, It's difficult, and then Clemson just didn't have those special guys on the outside this year that could really cause those guys any trouble. I mean, Clemson's receivers just could not get separation. The only guy that got any separation all night was Sammy, and even he had difficulty getting, you know, any real separation because they were able to sort of shift coverage to him where they needed to and really make a difference with that. So, you know, this is something that we said after Maryland that this defense, the secondary in particular, looked like they were starting to get things, like they were starting to get the way that pattern reading works in this scheme and starting to understand the checks that you have to make in terms of when you see this formation or that formation, you know, the communication is there, and understanding that, okay, if we see this route stem and this route stem together, and then that means they're probably going to be running this concept, you know, seeing how quickly they're managing to process that stuff. They're really getting that now. And that makes them that much better against this kind of scheme. And you could see that even with the linebackers as well. There are a couple plays, you know, in particular, there was one, where, you know, they had Sammy Watkins in the slot and Telvin Smith actually did the work as the underneath coverage, where he was able to read the route, and he was on it before Sammy actually got down and made his break, and before Taj Boyd made the throw. And you know, he, if he hadn't been turned the other way, I mean, it basically hit him in the back. But I mean, it's one of those where he was there before the receiver was. He could have potentially gotten an interception on that had he not been turned the wrong way. But, you know, he's there before the receiver because he's making the reads that quickly. And you can see that. I mean, Telvin Smith is basically the ideal nickel linebacker in this kind of scheme. I mean, you know, he's going to be a big loss for next year. But again, Terrence Smith also is a very good, you know, you're looking at a 6'3", 6'4" kind of guy that runs like that, that can really cover. Those guys can cover, they can move, they can tackle. And then you look at the size in front of them that sort of is able to occupy blockers. And those guys are starting to figure out that is really their role. They're not getting over aggressive, and they're able to occupy those blockers, and they're able to basically, give the linebackers and give that secondary the chance to bring the pass rush when they need to. And then you've got the best pass rusher on the team with Joyner, who, you know, when they bring him off the edge, I mean, there are times where it just looks like people are just shocked that he's actually getting there in the amount of time that he is. I mean, it's, he gets there so quickly. He's able to bend his body and make plays so quickly and get pressure from that position that, again, that just gives you that much more versatility because you can rush from those angles. So bottom line is that this is a very, very good defense, and it's on pace to do exactly what we suggested it would do in the preseason. And that's, you know, it would give up some plays early on while it was learning and be behind the 2012 defense statistically, at least at the mid-year point, and may not catch certain things in terms of statistically over the course of the year. But that by the end of the year, that this defense we felt would be better than the 2012 defense, even after losing all that personnel, because the personnel on this defense is actually more athletic and it's a deeper defense with more experience than what you saw in 2012. And I think that's what you're seeing now. I do think that, you know, it does need to be considered, though, that this was a terrible matchup for that Clemson offense. They don't have the same, as we've talked about, they don't have the same kinds of threats that they had in the past. But at the same point, this defense is built to stop what they do. So, you know, again, it's just a bad matchup overall. It's exactly why we felt that this would be a runaway kind of game. So, you know, that is going to mean that this defense did look about as good as it could against what is a good offense, but it was just a bad matchup. And there are a few things to think about in terms of where the defense still has some weaknesses moving into some later games in the year. You still have some problems with how light some of the inside linebackers are. When you're going against more of a traditional base offense with a fullback and a tight end, this sort of thing. You know, I'm a little bit more worried facing a University of Miami if they're able to put that kind of package in there with 21 personnel, two tight, you know, a tight end and two backs, this sort of thing. Same thing with the University of Florida, the way that they can go jumbo. That's where I think that there are still more concerns for the way that this defense is working. I think that they're better up front than they were early in the year. In terms of understanding where they need to be and how they need to control the gaps and so on in this defense. But against a power team, so if they should have to play an Alabama down the line later in the year, then that's still something that would concern me if I were the Florida State staff, and should probably be concerning to Florida State fans, is that there still are some weaknesses against sort of power packages, jumbo type stuff that they're really only going to see potentially against the University of Miami, less of a concern there, maybe against Virginia Tech, but again, that they're going to have to run their quarterback to really do it. Florida, but you know, their best back is out, so you know, maybe it's not as big of a concern in the regular season. But if you do play Bama, then the thing that they're going to definitely have to be better at is handling the running game and being able to do that with the linebacker personnel that they have, which is not really built to stop the power type stuff. And that, you know, that's where you saw Florida State struggle a little bit last year as well against Florida's jumbo packages and so on. And I think that's something that they definitely tried to experiment with early in the year against some of those teams, because they felt like that was something that they needed to improve on after last year. So we'll see as the year goes on whether that continues to improve. But in terms of running out there against a spread team, I don't think there's a spread team in the country that really would scare this defense. Just because of how many cover guys, how many legitimate NFL coverage guys they can stick out on the field at once. I mean, it's just a unique situation there. All right, we're going to go ahead and move to segment two, where we're going to talk about the Clemson offense in just a moment. As for the Clemson game on offense, well, there's not much to say other than that it's really easy being Jameis Winston right now. You know, the bottom line is that this guy is playing as well as you can play at that position. In fact, at this point, his season is not at a point where you're starting to say it's one of the best performances by a redshirt freshman in NCAA history, but you're starting to look at maybe one of the best quarterback seasons from anybody of any year. And to do this in a, you know, where you can't make an accusation that he's a system quarterback, because he's making the same kinds of throws. They're running the same kinds of things that they've asked everybody to do in this offense, that you're going to throw downfield, you're going to have to make decisions, you're going to have to make reads. I mean, he's not doing this on just a bunch of bubble screens. You know, it's been pretty amazing to watch how easily he's anticipated and how easy he's made this game look. Now, that said, the reason I say it's easy being Jameis Winston is that every player around him is doing his job. I mean, Winston was handed the keys to the Ferrari at the beginning of the season, and he's just proven to be a very good driver at high speed. But he's driving a major sports car right now where, you know, just like we said in the podcast before the Clemson game, this Florida State offense is the kind of five-tool offense that Clemson had last year, where you can stick five guys out on the field that really make you defend them, that you cannot just ignore one guy at the expense, you know, handle one guy at the expense of another. You can't ignore anybody that's out there. No matter how you cover, there's probably going to be someone open. And the thing about the way that Winston's playing is that he is going to locate the guy that's going to be open. And he's been hitting him. He's been hitting him. Not only has he been hitting him when he's open, but he's been hitting him in time and with the accuracy to keep people moving. And that's what's really unique about Winston. But, you know, when you're sticking a guy out there with Benjamin, with Shaw, with O'Leary, with Rashad Greene, who just was incredible in this game, and then with the backs that Florida State has, there's just nothing you can do as a defense to pick one guy and take that guy away, because they can just go to the next guy. And of course, that fits Jimbo Fisher's offense perfectly well, because Fisher's offense is such that on almost no play that he's ever going to call, is there a design outside of screen passes and things like that, is there a design to go to one particular player? I mean, Fisher's philosophy has always been to layer his routes and to give the quarterback the opportunity and the volition to throw to any of the five possibilities on the field, depending on what the defense gives. And then when each of those five guys is the kind of option that you have with Florida State here, then that becomes that much more devastating to a defense, because you just cannot take any one thing away. It's defensive Armageddon pretty quickly, because you can't take anything away. And that's what we're seeing right now is that with Winston being able to make the decisions the way that he is, and with the various tools that you've got, the various options that he's able to put the ball in their hands, this offense is starting to remind me, and I've talked to some other people, this team actually is reminding me of the 2001 Miami team that I thought coming into this year was the best team that I've ever seen play college football. And I think that this team, this Florida State team, still has a ways to go to get into that kind of discussion. But frankly, on the hoof, I mean, I saw the 2001 Miami team in person, and this team is actually not far off from that team. And if they continue to do what they're doing, then, you know, they get in the discussion of that kind of team. And in terms of how they force you to defend them, what made those Miami teams, that 2001 team in particular, so special on offense, is you had Andre Johnson, you had Kellen Winslow, you had Willis McGahee and Clinton Portis and these guys, and Clinton Portis, of course, in the 2000 team. You had, you know, all of these various players that they could stick out there, and you couldn't take one guy away because they just go to the next guy. And that's very much where Florida State's at. And to do that with the kind of offense that you do throw down the field, that you do a lot more pro-style type stuff, it actually gets harder to defend than when you've got that sort of thing doing what Clemson does or what Oregon does or that sort of thing. When you put that kind of personnel in this kind of system, it's off the charts, because there's nothing that you can do. They can still go power. They can still they can do things that are going to hurt you more down the field more quickly. Now, the one exception to that, I would say, would be Baylor, because of the way that they're able to use their tools and the way that they throw down the field as well. That would also be a place where, you know, this kind of weaponry would be used the same sort of way. But again, this is where you can start to see Jimbo Fisher's vision for what his offense would look like. And at this point, I think this is basically almost the platonic type, the platonic ideal type of what a Jimbo Fisher offense really looks like when it's being run by a guy who really understands everything. And that's where, you know, even with a guy that doesn't have the physical tools that Winston does, all you really need to run Fisher's offense with success is to be able to recognize these coverages and make quick decisions in the same way that that Winston is. Winston, of course, has that advantage that he's able to do things so quickly, and he has the tools to put the ball in such accurate, in such tight spaces and things like that. But really, it's his mind that makes him such a dangerous weapon in this Florida State offense. But, you know, again, everybody around him is making things easy. You know, this offensive line, looked outstanding, against Clemson. They were, you know, the Clemson offense is the one, or the Clemson defensive line, of course, came in. A lot of people were expecting that Clemson defensive line to be able to come in and make life difficult for Winston. But that offensive line, Irving did very well against Beasley. Although I never felt like Beasley was quite what he was billed to be. I mean, he's only about 230 pounds. And Irving, you know, Irving did well enough. Trey Jackson looked healthier. I thought Bobby Hart probably had the most impressive game of anybody, in terms of the offensive line. I thought he was outstanding in this game. He played extremely well in this game, and to be honest, may have played as well as anybody except for on the offense outside of Winston and then Rashad Green, who flashed speed that I didn't really realize he had. I mean, we all knew he was fast. But the play that he made, where he went up the sideline and broke down the angle on the Clemson safeties, coming from a curl route where he's able to catch it and turn around and run away like that. You know, you've got to be extremely fast to do that. I mean, this guy's going to run definitely in the low 4.4 range or better for the NFL Combine. And you know, he definitely made himself some money against Clemson. Yet again, he came through in a big game, and that just seems to be his MO. One other conversation that I had after the game with someone from the program, he was named as, you know, interestingly, the media talks a lot about Winston and his natural leadership and all that, but this person was talking about how the reason that this team is as good as it is and the reason that it has such good leadership, first person they mentioned was actually Telvin Smith, and then the next person they mentioned was Rashad Green, and then LaMarcus Joyner, and basically it was those three guys that they basically said, no, those three guys won't let us lose. Those three guys are the guys that keep us grounded. Those are the leaders on this team. And I think you can see that leadership, in the way that those guys have played in big games, in particular Green on the offense. But you can see the way that, you know, if you look closely, you can see that those guys are the ones setting the tone, and making, again, it's easier to be Winston because he doesn't have to lead, in that way. He can just basically help provide confidence, which is what he does. And keep things loose while those guys keep everybody working. And you know, I asked after the game, you know, how well are they gonna be able to handle success here? Are they gonna have any problems moving forward? You know, after blowing out Clemson this badly, and the person just shook the head. No. That pointed at Telvin and said, he won't let that happen. He won't let that happen. That won't happen on this team because of him, Rashad Green, and LaMarcus. They won't let that happen. And that's something interesting, again, to hear as we look forward, and in particular, looking ahead to North Carolina State, who has had an inordinate amount of success against very highly ranked Florida State teams of late, although all of those wins have been on the road in recent seasons. You know, it'll be interesting to see that difference because I think you're going to see, based on what I was hearing, you're going to see the difference between a Florida State program that loses games that it shouldn't, and, you know, isn't necessarily in a position to be able to go out and dominate every inferior team, in part because they need to play better, and in part because they didn't have the leadership to keep things rolling at all times and handle success. The feeling within the program is that this team has that leadership. And that it starts with Telvin Smith and Rashad Green and LaMarcus Joyner. So, you know, that's going to be interesting to see moving ahead into the NC State game, and whether they're able to basically go in and blow the doors off of NC State. And if they're able to do that, I think that tells you a lot about the difference between this team and prior Florida State teams. Not only is it more talented and more experienced, but it's a team that is not taking anyone lightly, and it's basically just going out and playing angry every game. And that's very hard to do for a group of 18 to 23-year-olds. It's just very difficult to do, to be able to focus like that every game. So one other thing to mention is that the Florida State offense in this Clemson game actually left a lot of tricks in the bag. I mean, they had an extra week to prepare. They actually had a lot of other things prepared in case they needed it. You know, some packages and things that they hadn't shown so far this year, and they just left that stuff in the bag. I mean, Jimbo Fisher's offensive philosophy has always been to use the simplest tool that will do the job. I mean, if he can run inside zone or outside zone or, you know, fullback dive and go all the way down the field every time, then he'll do it. Use the simplest tool that'll do the job. So, you know, no reason to pull that stuff out in this kind of game. They basically ran the same four pass concepts all game. Which is, you know, again, it just shows the flexibility of the way that Fisher's offense works, where you're able to run something like Houston and throw to four different guys, five different guys all the time, no matter, depending on how they cover it, you just throw to a different guy. And that's the benefit of the kind of offense that he runs. It makes it much more difficult on a defense because you're basically, as an offense, just running through what you have repped and executed multiple times, and you've just gotten quick with the decisions, and no matter what they do, they're going to be wrong. And that's basically how it's working right now. And, you know, they basically ran Houston smash, a couple variations of smash where, you had the snake route, off of that where basically, that inside guy will run a little skinny post instead of, off a double move instead of the smash. That's actually what the, interception was a smash call. That had a tag to the Y receiver, that slot receiver to run that little snake or shake route and go skinny, and it would have scored. But the headset went out for Sanders, Randy Sanders, who signals into Winston, and that's where you got that interception. But bottom line is that ultimately Fisher always believes in using the simplest thing that'll work. But they still have some of those packages in, some of the stuff for Carlos Williams, some things that are in there for Kermit Whitfield as well, and a couple things that they've you know just sort of got in their back pocket that'll build off of some of the other things, some of the basic stuff in the offense that they've shown, so that if you're able to stop a couple of those base things, they've got a couple little wrinkles that they'll throw in there, and there's no reason to pull them out until they actually need them. They'll be in there for Miami. They'll be in there for Florida. They'll be in there for ideally, if you play in the ACC title game, it'll either be Miami or Virginia Tech. I figure it'll be Virginia Tech again, but they'll keep all that stuff in there. And if they don't need it any of those places, then you might see it, you know, you might not see it any of that stuff until the national title game, but it'll be there. And you know, that's just how dominant this team has been, that they haven't even needed to think about doing anything other than the very most basic stuff. And of course, one other thing I forgot to mention, actually, a little bit earlier, talking about how easy it is being Jameis Winston, is that again, I had the chance to be down on the field under the goalpost when Clemson ran down the hill, and of course the crowd was in full throat, and you know it's just a terrific atmosphere there, and quite frankly, you know, this is something I do want to remind people of. I don't think that Clemson team was overrated. And I don't think that Death Valley is overrated. I think that's a top 10 Clemson team. Maybe they're overrated at 3, but they're definitely a top 10 team. It's a bad matchup for them against Florida State, but that's a top 10 team. And that's definitely one of the top 10 venues, in Florida State football. If there's 10 better, then I'd be shocked. I've been to a lot of venues in college football, and that's one of the best atmospheres in college football. But the thing that people didn't understand, the people who were expecting that maybe Winston would fold under pressure, that, you know, that kind of environment would be overwhelming. When I was down there, all I could think about is, man, I wish I could play in this kind of environment, because this would just be the kind of crowd that I would just want to gut. I would love to make this crowd, shut up. And, I was standing next to Desmond Howard and made that comment, down there, tapped him on the shoulder, made the same comment. And he just looked at me and, you know, nodded the same way, like, oh yeah, this is a kind of crowd that if you're a visiting player, you want to play in that kind of environment. If you're a competitor, the way that Winston is, you want to play in that environment. And I think he made it very clear very early that that's the kind of environment that he likes to play in. He wants to have the chance to shut that crowd up. He wants the chance to go out there and have all those people screaming and yelling and making just such a terrific environment. And then for him to go out and just straight up be an assassin. And that's exactly the kind of guy you want to be a quarterback. And it makes it a lot easier when everybody's playing well around you. But again, it sort of shows again, it's easy being Jameis Winston because that's just the way he is wired. You know, that kind of competitor just wants to be in that kind of environment. And I think that speaks well that's the kind of thing where looking forward, if this is a team that goes to a national championship game, that's the kind of guy who is not going to be overwhelmed by the bright lights, by all the clutter, as Jimbo Fisher likes to say. That's not going to happen. At any rate, well, let's go ahead and move on to the third segment where we're going to talk about the upcoming NC State game. We'll preview just a little bit of that, and we'll move on from there. Okay, looking ahead to the North Carolina State game, this will be a pretty short segment because, quite frankly, this game should not be close. North Carolina State is better than people think they are, but they are not a very good football team this year. I will say that they are a different team with Mitchell at quarterback rather than Pete Thomas. Pete Thomas is a pretty significant drop off from Brandon Mitchell. Brandon Mitchell gives them an additional run threat, although he's still coming off of a broken foot, which will probably keep him somewhat limited in this. But he's a big difference from Pete Thomas, both in the run and in the passing game. He's more accurate down the field than Thomas is, and they're definitely going to be harder to defend with him. That said, they're still running a spread. They're running basically the same offense that Northern Illinois ran in the bowl game against Florida State. That's where Dave Doran, the coach at North Carolina State, actually came from, and that was his offense. That's what they were running. North Carolina State's running the same thing, and actually they don't. Right now, they're probably not as good at it as Northern Illinois was last year. That said, Mitchell does give them enough of an upgrade that I would expect them to have some success. They're actually decent. It's a decent team that will have some success. They don't run it well enough, though, to really concern you too much there. I mean, they're averaging only about 4 yards a carry on the season. They're getting 4.1 yards a carry actually on the season, which is it's not awful, but it's not something that scares you with Matt Days and Shadrack Thornton and those guys as their primary backs, but they're not going to really scare this defense, I don't think, especially given that they're not going to be able to line up in tight formations and pound the defense, which is, I think, what you really need to do in order to have a chance against Florida State. You're not going to beat them by putting more defensive backs on the field. Actually, one other thing, thinking about the Clemson game again, how impressive it was watching true freshman Nate Andrews in underneath coverage as well against Sammy Watkins, where they actually, in the money package, had him on Watkins out in the flat and just all over Watkins because of the way that they were able to use him in coverage, and seeing the way that he's developed as a freshman and how big that kid is and how well he moves at that size is pretty significant. So, but either way, with the spread offense, I don't see teams that run a spread actually having a lot of success against Florida State this year. And I think if you're going to be able to beat this Florida State team, you need to have an outstanding quarterback and you need to be able to run the ball between the tackles in particular. And they've got a good quarterback, but I don't think they're going to be able to pound the ball. So I think that this is a game that, frankly, they're not going to be able to score enough points to win. I do think they're decent up front on defense. They've got some players on the defensive line. They did last year, and that's part of why Florida State struggled with them on the road. But again, because of the way Florida State throws the football right now and how quickly they're able to get the ball out, I don't see this one being a concern this year. If you remember, those of you who have been over at Noel Digest for a while will remember that I actually picked North Carolina State to beat Florida State last year, which actually happened. As everybody remembers, I think it will be very far from that this year. It's going to look a lot more like the game in 2011 that was in Tallahassee, where Florida State dominated that game from start to finish. It's not a game that if I were a gambling man, that I would put money on, but I don't see this game being within 21 points. I think that, this will be a game where, ideally you get some time for Jacob Coker to practice for his, do a little audition for his starting opportunity at Alabama next year, and give some of the backups a chance to play a little bit and get healthy. But I don't see this game being especially competitive. I think we're looking at something that's going to wind up over a 20-point deficit. It's just a matter of time and how long it takes to get there. It'd be interesting to see the continued development. At any rate, that's it for this podcast. On behalf of the rest of the staff of Knoll Digest, I'm Jason Staples. Look forward to talking to you next time. I made this.